Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
LeBron James with no regard for human life. Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Iverson against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Sneaker History Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Mike. I am running a solo show today, but I have had the pleasure of meeting two people who are a staple male in my childhood, but a lot of my fellow sneaker enthusiasts, sneaker heads, collectors, whatever you want to call yourself, because when you went to that mailbox, there was a particular magazine out there that, well, could change your life, especially if you didn't live in a big city. And if you know what I'm talking about already, you know what I'm talking about. But it's not East Bay. East Bay was a book that means so much to so many sneaker collectors, enthusiasts out there. And I got the two gentlemen who are responsible for that joy they brought us all as sneaker collectors. Rick, how are you guys doing?
Well, Mike, thanks for having us.
Yeah. What a treat. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Look forward to it. Yes, sir. No, I appreciate you guys. Again, as I was telling them when we were just talking, this is kind of a full circle moment for me because this was as a kid, I grew up in Beaumont, Texas. So near Houston, but not quite Houston. So it was a small town. And we didn't get all of the releases that came out in a bigger city. So seeing everything in the book, seeing the athletes, it was just such a cool experience. And I mean, Art and Rick, as we get into it, I mean, I know you guys are lifelong friends. I haven't finished the book. I've started it. And the fact that you guys were born in a hospital 2 days apart from each other.
Yep. Yes, sir.
And then became friends. That is the most like divine intervention thing I've ever seen in my life. That doesn't happen. And then you guys start something so memorable to so many people. I mean, I'll let you guys like really jump into it. How did you go from friends to business partners to legends and sneakers? I mean, I'm just going to call it what it is. You guys are legends and sneakers.
Well, the catalog is. I'm not necessarily.
You started the catalog, so you get to be in that discussion too.
It is truly everything we've done looking back has been always almost serendipity. Just the right place, the right time. Doing the right thing with the right people.
With the wrong person. Yeah.
Oh, well, the other people. Yes. So, you know, and East Bay was just a small idea, just a basic idea. We just wanted to get the best athletic footwear possible to young athletes. We were both coaches at one time before we started East Bay. And that was our whole thing. That was our mission the whole time. That was Rick came up with that, of course. Good job, Rick.
If you started the book, you know that we aren't the smartest. So we had to keep the idea simple.
Hey, you know what? You ran a business. So running a business and being successful as long as you guys were, I ain't gonna let you even say that. That takes some smarts and some tenacity because running a business is not an easy task. No.
Well, when you run a, you look what you're doing looks tremendously fun.
Yep.
And what we did at East Bay with the people we had, it was so fun. We came up in the golden years of athletic footwear and the companies and everything, and it was a fun time.
As we
you're
get
fun.
Into...
We aren't fun by nature. You take this to a whole new level.
I don't know. You guys, come on. From the start of the call, you guys look like you have a good time regardless. So I don't believe that you guys aren't fun.
Can you believe 16 years of college between us, we never took a business course?
That's amazing. You know, it's funny. I went to school for business, and I guess this would be the only business venture I've had. So it doesn't – hey, you did more than me, and I'm paying for it with a student loan, so I got you.
You're just on your way. You never know where it's going to lead.
So. You're 100% right. And again, do it for the love, because I love talking about sneakers. I love talking to guys like you
work.
Who are into it. Exactly. It's not. This is definitely more of a passion than anything else. And I can so that was really with the catalog. That's what it felt like, you know, with you guys. It wasn't just, hey, here's a listing of a bunch of shoes, but you can just tell the care that you guys put towards putting the book together, like really speaking to athletic culture at the time and then bleeding to other, you know, sneaker culture. It was a passion project, seems like, each issue for you guys, or each magazine, I should say.
We said early on, our focus was trying to get the best shoes to the athletes. And, mm-hmm. and we really, one of the things I think that we're really kind of proud about, and maybe it's a shortcoming, I don't know, is that we just never wavered from that. That's what drove the whole East Bay business.
So you guys, Wisconsin, correct?
Yes, sir. Little town in Wisconsin.
Little town in Wisconsin. So when
you're trying to melt down from snow right now.
Are you still have snow out there? Jeez.
God, yeah. Where we live in the summer, there's still probably, I talked to somebody yesterday, there's got to be at least 3 feet, if not a little bit more, of snow left. So,
holy moly. Again, being in Texas for about 99% of my life, I don't know what that looks like. So,
yeah. And Beaumont had great sports teams. So,
just the name alone, that should be a song name, Beaumont something. I met my girl in Beaumont. Something.
We dig deep enough, I'm sure we can find something.
Yay.
So when you guys were coaching your athletes, was it just the lack of athletic apparel and equipment out there? Like, where was everyone going at that time to find these things to fill those needs for shoes and equipment? What was it?
Go ahead.
Let me just add one little thing, and then I'm going to give it to Rick.
About Beaumont?
So when I was my last year teaching before we started East Bay, everything was probably white and white sneakers. And, you know, and really pretty bland, and the schools were still buying shoes. Then somebody called me with an idea. And what'd you think, Rick?
I said pizza delivery, first of all. And you shot that down right away, and I'm so glad you did, because this thing worked out okay so far. I was lucky enough and got to go to a national meet and
track meet.
Track meet, and there were things that we had never seen before, and you know, Art's right. The schools were buying shoes to give to the kids to use to help promote more kids coming out for the sport. But they were bought for durability, not for performance. Can't talk. They were bought for durability, not for performance. I would say mid-range, probably, don't you think? Mid-range of the running boom. And so new technology started to come out. People were focusing on getting outside, participating more. And it got to be to the point where there was so many new shoes on the market, besides only one or two that the coaches could choose from, they couldn't keep up with it. And they shouldn't have to. I mean, their impact is making kids better and helping kids discover who they are and feeling good about themselves. And they were good at that. But helping them buy running shoes for track anyway, because we started just with track, wasn't one of their main focuses. So we saw an opening to come in and a chance to take shoes to people that didn't have the selection that we saw down in Arkadelphia, Arkansas at the national track meet, and thought that we would not only take different shoes to kids, but we would go directly to them. And that's kind of what led us eventually into the catalog, is the whole concept of going directly to the athlete. Don't wait for the athlete to come to you. Give them something that they can make decisions from. And go from there.
And you did that, man. You guys did that well. I had so many cool things in that book. I think I might have to go to my parents' house. I'm pretty sure I have some like dusty old ones sitting in like a attic box somewhere. I used to keep them forever. Oh. I just love looking at them. And it's such a cool moment to, again,
it's a snapshot.
It is. It's definitely a snapshot in time. And it's crazy to think that when you look at how, you know, it was East Bay magazines before, you know, the internet. Even when the internet started, East Bay was still this, I don't know, this really, I don't know if we just had an emotional attachment to it, but it was the building block to what all these sneaker, you know, websites, these sneaker stores are now, because you guys gave everything. It wasn't, like you said, you started out with track, but you evolved to so much more, to this apparel, this, you know, basketball, you know, soccer, all these different pieces that can make up an athlete or make up someone who just love the culture of sneakers, whether they are in a big city or in, you know, small two street town somewhere. So that, like you say, that purpose was definitely fulfilled. And I think that really got a lot of people introduced to, again, outside just the white sneaker, something they could express themselves on at the track meet or at a basketball tournament so they can, you know, really stand out and feel good about themselves.
Well, and it's, you know, and Art mentioned it before, this was a time of so many firsts. I mean, the first time Michael Jordan put on an Air Jordan, the first time that Shaquille O'Neal was drafted early out of high school to play basketball, the first time Barry Sanders ever touched a ball. You know, first time that Deion Sanders ever played in an MLL game and an NFL game in the same week. Those kind of first leave an impression on you. And we were just lucky to kind of have a front row seat at watching all the amazing things that happened. And the sneaker industry grew up.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, mid-80s, when we were really starting to bloom, Nike was $1 billion. And it was $50 billion now, a couple of years ago. And you're like, so, I mean, this industry has gotten so large. But we were luckily, we had like, maybe not front row seat, maybe in the back row.
Yeah, way in the back.
You were in the room somewhere, you know.
I mean, back then it was one NBA game a week. There was, you know, ESPN was just getting going and everything.
Yeah,
it was an amazing time and a fun time. We were so fortunate.
Yeah. Man, that's amazing. So, you know, that leads into my next question for you guys. Seeing that boom of sport and sneaker culture, when did you guys realize that you were an integral part of that? Because you were definitely something that, again, is a staple. What year or what moment was like, wow, this is really something big and meaningful?
I think there's a, you know, and you said it earlier on about kids in small towns, and that's where we started. We, you know, we branched down from Wisconsin as best we could because we were undercapitalized and we had to grow slowly. And fortunately, at that time, the shoe companies.
I mean, 4,000 was undercapitalized.
Yeah, you're probably right. We were living high off the hog. I remember that lazy boy you had in your office. You were just sitting back.
Oh, never mind. Man, we can look at him just, you know, in style. So lazy boy.
but it you know, it was a time that we all grew up, and now I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
No, that's okay, because it was a good point you made. What was your question again, Mike? Sorry, ask it.
No. So what was the...
So as we were all growing up, we started in the middle and branched out. And I think it was 87 when we first sent our first multi-sport catalog. All the other pieces before that were just the spring sports, so baseball and running. Fall sports was football and volleyball and soccer, and then basketball and wrestling were the, you know, the winter sports. But we put them all together finally for the first time in 1987, and that was the first year that we mailed to the whole country. And by about 88, even maybe early 89, we started to see that the East Coast, New York, New Jersey, the West Coast, California,
Texas,
those orders were starting to grow bigger than the orders that we had been working on for the last 8 years before that in the central part of the country. So we knew that we had finally hit on not just athletes, but sneakerheads as well.
That, so when those orders started coming in and just, you know, faster and bigger from the different coasts, did it ever prove a problem having to, you know, sourcing product from the brands at a quicker pace and in a bigger quantity?
Go ahead.
Oh, well, we, you know, again, because we started with an exorbitant amount of money, $4,000, in inventory was we learned at our first clinic we went to, because our original idea was to just take a size run and then fit everybody. And then we would deliver the shoes after we ordered them and bring them back to them. Well, that was a stupid idea. We were probably the dumbest two people on the face of the earth. The kids wanted the shoes right away. So we knew that inventory was critical to the whole operation of East Bay, and we had tried to build trust with the athletes. So we worked really hard on building up our inventory. Well, one thing we, as we got into software, we created a program that would allow us to capture lost sales. I don't know if anybody's ever done this before, but so in one of our buyers, I think it was the Pippen shoe. Nike was late on delivering the Pippen shoe. And so we were able to capture lost demand of what we could have sold had we had it. So by the time we got our order, we had already ordered four fill-ins above that order. So we ordered four times the amount of shoes that we had originally ordered. We screwed up. We should have ordered more Pippins to begin with. But we were able to use technology to capture this demand, and the companies had backup inventory. Today, they don't have that. So again, that's part of the golden era of being at the right place at the right time. Yeah. That they, the companies helped us grow our inventory because they had it. Now we, the $4,000 would have been 4 minutes of sales, and then
and that's it. We should have done. So that actually it made me think about something, because now you guys have seen, you know, when there were the East Bay was a website, how when these really sought after releases come out and they'll go just like that and cause internet crashes. When it was still phone calls, when it was still people ordering directly from the number in a magazine. Is there any particular shoe that comes to mind that caused just a ruckus in like the ordering center or fulfillment center? It's like, we're getting too many calls and we got to shut this down.
Do I get one?
Please.
Well, you got to go back to the Jordan.
Okay.
We were, you know, a lot of track and field. We saw the Jordan and says, this is a really great, lightweight, flexible shoe. Not only that, but it looked cool. And back then, not everybody was so hot on it, you know. It was the one thing we bought, because we bought it in team colors. We had white and red, black, blue, white and green, white, maroon, anything under the sun. It was the one, I just remember it was the one product we ever bought that if that product didn't sell, we were gone. We were toast. So if nobody liked it, well, we loved it. We thought, oh, this is a great shoe. And our customers kept coming in and saying, oh, it's a cool shoe. So we'd show, you know, we'd show the players around that we had. And really cool. So we were pretty confident. But that had to be, you know, and before the Jordan, it seemed almost like athletic footwear was like a piece of equipment. And after that, shoes became identity, I think. You know,
definitely
it was, you know, and this is a long time ago. Yeah, you know, we're small, you know, Nike and all these companies were not that big. And it really was a difference maker. And then after that became the golden eras of coming out with the Griffies and the Jacksons and, you know, the Bonos and all those shoes, the Pippins. And that's when it started. Nowadays, that's ubiquitous.
You're right.
The Grand Hill. The Iverson,
You bring up such a good point, Art. So when Nike first brought the Jordan out, they did it like they did their other shoes, and they brought them out in team colors. And they evolved to say, well, we don't have to make a white and green, a white and purple, white maroon Air Jordan. This should be a standalone shoe. And now you're seeing fewer shoes that come out with the white reds, you know, all the team colors, because they've all got custom colors based on certain athletes and they're the things that they like and what's important to them. So even with a shoe so hot as a Jordan, they still made changes to how that shoe is distributed.
Yeah.
And presented.
Man. Yeah.
You know, as you read and probably saw, even Nike didn't think that Jordan was going to sell all that well.
For sure. That was definitely, they struck gold with that one. And I mean, to this day, what, 40 years later, 41 years later, I mean, it's still just a constant, you know, front runner for sneaker consumers and, you know, people who just collect whatever that may be. It's you guys made the right call. Clearly, you made the right call. You wanted those.
But see, I knew there'd be one somewhere along the way.
I think it was my idea.
I think it helped your idea. No. And another sidelight to that is they came out with the red, black, and red Air Jordan, and then they mm-hmm. came out with the black and red. Well, most retailers couldn't carry the black and red. And so we really? Didn't necessarily sell, well, because they just couldn't carry so much inventory of a shoe that half the population said, I hate this thing. And the other half said, I got to have 20 pair of them. But so Art was so smart because we had discussed it going in, and he said, we've got to have both colors in big numbers. Mm-hmm. And so because so few retailers carried the black and red,
yeah,
that's one of the shoes that probably lit up the phone bank that Ooh. that really almost said, oh, geez, we still didn't order enough. So, yeah, it's so interesting on how this whole sports culture evolved.
Yeah, and in those days, our young athletes would call and say, do you really have this shoe, whether it be the Air Flight one or something, in this color? We don't know it existed. We made sure that we had inventory if we were going to grow, because last thing you want is disappoint the customer.
But yeah, and that's something that was awesome about the book.
We can disappoint Mike. We just didn't want to disappoint the customers.
No, you didn't disappoint me at all, because so that when you say like the colors, when people didn't see colors in the store, if you go into the East Bay magazine, for me, it was the, what was this? I think it was 2000 with the Cherrywood Jordan 16, who I still to this day have never gotten. I was a sixth grader at this time. I remember seeing that. I'd never seen one before. I had friends of mine had the black and red pairs, but I saw that Cherrywood pair in the East Bay magazine at that year, and it was still enamored me. That one year before that, you had the white and Columbia Jordan 15 and Lowe's. Like, all like those things, I just remember so vividly. And it's just like seeing things you couldn't go to the store and see on shelves if you didn't, again, live in that place that got the allocations. And you guys having that kind of that forward thinking to say, you know what, if this store's not going to take it, let's put it into the book and make it available. Again, it's almost like you say someone calls you, do you really have this? It's almost unbelievable because no one else would have it at the time. So you guys did something that people, you know, you were someone's like dream, because like I could actually have a chance to do this and not have to get in a car and drive X amount of hours.
Well, and you look at what you said about the 2000 AJs that back started right after that, right just before that, Nike started allocating. So even though we wanted to order 15,000 pair or whatever it was, we only got 1,500 pair.
Really?
There was no fill-in. So again, like we mentioned earlier, when we were starting out, all the companies had backup inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, they learned that just isn't economically feasible for them.
Yeah.
And so they really started limiting how many you could get. So which is sad for you because you don't have the 14, but 1,500 other people from East Bay. Yeah.
Someone got it. That's all that matters. Someone got it.
and it just makes it more valuable because there just aren't that many more. There just aren't that many out there.
Yeah. And you know what? That became a big thing as the internet became more popular and again, sneaker culture became more prominent. Which you guys, allocations, changing due to the lack of numbers that the brands were producing. Did you ever have any pushback about, you know what, should we even put this in a book or should we even offer it? Did anything ever kind of give you that, I don't know if we should even like put an order for this, we can't offer a bunch of them?
I remember a number of times in the catalog that we had to put sold out before the catalog even went out. Because we'd start getting calls for, the Barkley or the new Jordan, that, and it's gone. So
we pictured it. And because we wanted people to know we had it, but
mm-hmm.
you had to put
that.
Sold
and
out
I think it was the Shaq Gnosis, one of the pump shoes.
That can't remember. Practice, mm-hmm. practice.
Oh yeah,
sure. Iverson love
sorry, couldn't remember. Allen Iverson shoe.
Man, that's
ancient
crazy.
History for you guys.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, hey, no worries. So on this shelf, you can't see the bottom. Like, so I have a whole bottom full of Iversons. The question is one of my all-time favorite shoes. So I'm right there. Don't you worry. I know where you're coming from on there. But, dang, that's crazy. I didn't realize that was the case. So, I mean, of course, like you say, you still want to let them know that you have to shoot. And I noticed a lot, sometimes in a magazine, if you put something on sale, you guys would be sure to, hey, this is the sizes we have. You know, if it was big sizes, if it was a bunch of small sizes. I think that was super helpful because it takes the guesswork out of calling and being disappointed. So it really helped a lot because it's like, you know, we have them. Oh, we only have 14. It's like, well, I can't do anything with that. But you guys are really upfront about what was available. Even if it was sold out when you printed it, I think that gives a lot of, as a consumer, that gives us a lot of respect for you guys as a business because you're not trying to like kind of do the bait and switch or put the wool over somebody. You're, hey, this is what I have, but here's a new and other options as well. So that did help with the purchasing process with you guys.
Trust was so important. I mean, we felt teamwork at East Bay, teamwork with our customers. We wanted trust. So if we tried so hard that we didn't want to disappoint the customers. We didn't want to sell what we had. We wanted to sell what the customer wanted. That was important. There were times in many early years, if we didn't have it and we knew somebody who did, we would just tell, hey, try these people. I think they got that product.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was important.
That's awesome. Now, when did you guys get off the phones? I know at one point you guys had to be taking orders. When did you guys have to say, okay, I got to get off the phones and we got to handle this other side of the business and dedicate a team to dealing with orders and fulfillment and things like that?
So you said you're married, wife.
Yes, sir.
Do you ever do something like clean somewhere and I don't like this, you don't do a very good job? That was Rick and I. They wanted us off the phones as soon as possible. We weren't really good at it.
So. Oh, man. So how long did that last before you did? She was like, you know what? Get on out of here. How long were you on there?
Wow, I don't even know. We had the capability, and even though we weren't on the phones, we spent, I would say, a good hour of our day sometimes, maybe half of that, listening to phone calls. So we could listen in on the calls coming in, so we still kept in touch with what kids were saying, what they were asking for, what's important to them, because that really we felt very strongly that that's what fueled our growth, was understanding the customer and really being able to let them know that we're listening, and that they have power, and you tell us what you want and we will try to make it happen.
I think all the way to the end we would have certain coaches that we started with that still called us and wanted to talk to us.
That's awesome.
It's going to take a long time. I hope I don't mess this up.
It's like, hold on, I think I got this still. We can make it happen.
Finger typing just takes so long on the computer, you know?
So you just got to get that phone underneath here and just kind of...
Early on, that's what we did. We didn't have fancy phones. We actually had... Art still has a sore neck from...
You gotta hold it. That was, man, had to stretch the line out, make sure you were reaching.
So this kind of an aside, I saw my granddaughter this weekend and she's talking about the book she'd been reading. And she says, how come you guys, when you took an order and you had to run down and look, make sure it was there, how come you didn't take the phone with you? And I had to explain that, you know, this is before all this stuff was going on. The phone had a cord on it. You know, when we came up, there was no mail order. Everything we did, so many of the people we had working for us, luckily they didn't know we weren't business people. If they'd have been business people, they probably wouldn't have done it. So we pretty much came up with every system that we needed for mail order and for young athletes. So it was quite the ride.
So that raises a question for me, because I worked in Champs when I was in college. So I know the back room, the stock room is treacherous sometimes, especially when new inventory comes. As you guys are figuring out the best processes, the logistics for getting everything in order, are there any days that you guys early on had to say, you know what, we can't take any phone calls, shut down for a day just to organize an inventory? Because I know that can be a beast within itself, especially when you're taking on these huge orders back in the day, like with the Jordans, things like that.
We never, go ahead, Rick.
Well, one of the things that we're really, really glad for is that we had at one time 7 warehouses around town. And so we were running all over the place. And you get Wisconsin winters and we get software updates. And we never missed a day of shipping, never once.
Wow.
And it's something that we are really proud of. But early on, we were kind of in that situation that you talked about. And my old high school track coach stopped by the store and said, I got a guy in the track team that I think he'd like working for you. He came in and dropped his jaw, but he went to work. He straightened everything up in 2 days. It was unbelievable. And before we had a computer, he was a human computer. He knew where every shoe was. He knew where every size was, every piece of clothing. It was just,
that's awesome.
He became a human computer, and we were so thankful for him. Fortunately, after that, we obviously got some software to help us. But those early years were pretty hectic because most of our inventory, we were in a building that the bottom half was a car repair shop. So there was a long, steep runway to get down to where most of the shoes are. So all the people that worked for us early on got in great racing shape and great physical condition because it was up and down the. But anyway, so we were sometimes so busy unloading trucks that we would just throw the shipping cartons down this thing, and poor Don Baptist is
sliding down.
He came down, and here's all these cases stacked up on top of each other, and he just went to work and did it. It was pretty cool. We were glad though to get some software to not have to run up and down the stairs.
I bet, because I mean, I can only imagine just like, all right, whose legs are still in tip top shape for today to go up that ramp back and forth. So. That is, man, that's definitely one to...
So we had the 7 warehouses around. We started in Rick's mom's basement for inventory. So it was, rocking and rolling.
So when did you guys consolidate to, like, did you ever consolidate just to one warehouse?
At the end, we had a 1 million-square-foot warehouse.
I think right after we went public, filed our IPO, the proceeds from that went to a warehouse.
Went for a building. We had some people in our town built a warehouse for us.
Oh, cool.
They didn't trust us before we were public, so I thought, well, maybe these guys are okay.
That's right. Thank you. I forgot that.
Paul Gassner.
Yeah, Paul Gassner. Thanks, Paul. He's the only guy we knew the only person we hung around with that had any. He's still our accountant. He was our accountant back then, and he still is to this day. But he's the only one, I think.
He was honest.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah. I know that was one of his downfalls. But I think he's still the only one until we brought in John and Dick and Harry that really had any accounting experience. And so he did help us with, monthly reports and that kind of thing. But we didn't have any software that gave us total updates and usernames and data, building our database. That was all something that got added.
He was the only one who knew numbers. And I remember, I believe we were about 2, maybe 3 years into it. And Rick says, what can we do to make more money? He says, you guys should go get a job somewhere.
Well, thanks for being honest.
he was. You were fun.
Now, were you guys using similar software to like a Foot Locker or a Athlete's Foot or any of the other like retail stores at the time? Or did you guys have to find something that was tailored towards?
There was nothing for mail order. We had to develop everything. Oh. Go ahead.
Wow.
Well, we didn't have to develop, but we had to find it. Because we found
there was nothing out there.
Very little. We tried this thing called MOMMY, mail order management. And it we couldn't capture a database. It would tell you how many Air Jordans you had, but it didn't tell you where they were, and it didn't tell you how to find them. But they said you got 12.
You got them somewhere. Good luck.
So eventually, and this is it's kind of a cool story for us. It may not be worth your show, but a guy who started off as a partner with us, he took over kind of finding us software. He ran into a guy in Indiana called Al Langsenkamp, and his company name was Sigma Micro. And Al was one of the leaders in the country in developing mail order software. And he did a spectacular job and allowed us because we were one of his early clients, he allowed us to come to him with ideas of what we needed, and he would put it in for us and then hopefully also sell it. And I'm sure other people gave him ideas too for us, but then he would create other products. But he was the guy that we were the second people in the country to have real-time inventory on the internet.
Wow.
And the other company that was number one, it was also on Sigma Micro Software in Wisconsin, Land's End. They were probably about twice or three times our size at that time.
Yeah.
And they were the first in the country to have real-time inventory on the internet.
That's crazy. So when did you guys go from, you know, just the book to, when did you guys start the website?
As soon as we could afford it. I don't know what year that was. I'm not sure what year that was, but do you remember?
The website was actually started after Rick and I had left. Well,
gotcha.
Actually, we'd started it a little bit, but that was really developed, luckily using Foot Locker's money.
Okay. Like someone else's pocket took care of that one. Okay, I got you. Okay. I wasn't sure.
It was a big price tag. Our software didn't sync very well with Foot Locker software after we sold.
Okay.
And that was a little bit of an issue, not bad, but a little bit. And eventually they forced us, we were gone at the time, but they forced East Bay to change. Our software was centered around sports. Mm-hmm. So basketball is X amount, track and field is X amount, baseball is X amount. And that gave you a total. Foot Locker software was centered around, here's the total that we want to buy for. Now let's fill in the sports. Because one of the things that we've talked about a bunch that we thought was really helpful to our growth was that we didn't have a big number we were going to. We looked at basketball and said, we did this amount in basketball last year. Based on what we know, what can we do this year? And the same thing for volleyball, for baseball. We broke it down by sport. And so it really helped our buyers focus in and feel like they were really important to the overall growth and the overall size of what the company's going to be. And they had their own little avenue that they were in charge of.
Their own company.
Yeah, their own little company.
And that's awesome. Yeah.
So you said you worked at Champs, and I'll just a little bit of an aside. So our vice president of merchandise was a man we hired named Dick Johnson. And he was, if you read in the book, you'll see how we hired him and everything. Well, when we left, after we left, and Harry Colgard was president for a couple of years, and then Dick took over, and he was president of East Bay.
Yeah.
Later, he became the president and CEO of Foot Locker.
Okay.
So you probably worked for him at one time.
May have signed my check for a while.
The hardest days of his life was shutting down the East Bay computer system because he did not think what they were going to do was going to work.
Yeah.
It all booted up. But he says, you know, they could never make the two systems work together. And, you know, you still look at, you look at the United States government, a lot of the systems they have are like from the early, you know, from 20 years ago, and they can't change it. You know, they can't find a way to change it out. So, yeah, he said it was one of the toughest days of his life.
He's going to like hitting that button Dick like, okay, I'm going to turn it off.
Well, Dick knew that we had never missed a day of shipping. So he was worried that when they made the switch that we might not be able to ship that day. And he worked so hard to keep that track record going.
That makes sense. Yeah. It's kind of, it would be kind of daunting knowing you guys had a perfect record. Like, we don't want to have that blemish. And
I don't remember having a perfect record in attendance at school. How about you?
Well, I think that third year of third grade, I think we hardly missed a day that third year of third grade. I'm pretty sure.
Hardly missed a year. Oh, man. You guys definitely gave your teachers a run for their money, didn't you?
Well, as you read the book early, we did actually get kicked out of kindergarten a couple of times. So that was, we had an early beginning. That was all his fault.
Of course.
Oh, man. Now, as you guys were, you know, dealing with inventory and something you had, you know, said earlier, you really were focused on hearing phone calls, being in tune with your customer base, the culture. When you were meeting with different brands to bring in product. How did you guys kind of decide what you wanted to put in the book? Was it based off those things you were hearing, or you say, you know what, let's take as much as we can and then kind of filter down from there?
We would look at every year and say, okay, if we sold, what's going to be the hot shoe? Mm-hmm. We had to decide that. We would listen to people. But basically, it came down to in the early days, the first few was Rick and I picked everything.
Yeah.
And then later, Rick's brother, Tommy, did a great job. I mean, it was all these other people that took over the buying as you became bigger. But we had to choose every time which one was going to be the hot one. And Rick had developed the software thing with the buyers that we would know right away if we made the right choice or not.
Anything out there that kind of sticks out? We talked about the hot item. Anything stick out that was kind of a stinker? Maybe that you thought was going to do well, like maybe didn't do as well as you hoped?
There were a couple. And I still see them, when we talked to the buyers when we were writing the book, they didn't let me forget it either. That was my choice. I think it was a Reebok Rad. And then there was
Rad.
I thought it was a cool shoe.
It came in solid colors.
Yeah.
And it was such a cool shoe. And that's the kind of stuff that was really hot. And for whatever reason,
it made the tent sale big.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know if it was, we're not sure why that didn't go, because we both liked it and it fit right in with what everyone else, and maybe that's it fit right in with what everyone else was
doing.
Well,
we both like it, yeah. But I got blamed for it.
Well, you got blamed for everything. What else? It really, that might have been the most high profile shoe we ever had that didn't work, but most of the other shoes that didn't work were kind of the lower end shoes.
Okay.
We thought that maybe, you get, because during our growth, there were a lot of new people coming into sports. And so they don't always want to spend the big bucks, or that, shoes weren't always that important to them. But as we got going, you could tell that people wanted what was hot and people wanted what was high end and high tech. And so we sometimes tried to go overboard on some of the stuff that was kind of entry level. And
we always let our customer choose what was hot.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't try to push it on them and anything. And it was up to them.
Yeah.
I think as athletes and coaches, we had a field, a pretty good field to start with. And with all the people we had, beating the bushes and asking people what they thought of these things.
Yeah.
It was tough.
Yeah.
But it's somewhat of a science and somewhat of a gut feel.
I can see that.
I see you've had it too. I was looking at some of your podcasts and that. So I got to buy the Puma Nitro, by the way. So
you'll love it if you're looking to get a comfortable running shoe. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it looked light.
Oh, it weighs nothing. It's insane. And I mean, for you guys being track coaches back in the day, I mean that's right up your alley. That's perfect for you.
He was a track coach, Ricky the Rabbit. I was baseball and basketball. So
okay, well, so you made your kids run at some point, though.
They didn't like that. Well, only if we didn't win, probably.
As you guys are again picking and choosing shoes that went into the magazine, kind of again figuring out hitting the streets, figuring out what was hot, being able to work with brands as they're introducing things. What was one of, I guess, maybe the most memorable or most crazy at the time that you guys remember that you guys were introduced to? I know a lot of the brands would do like the events where they'll say, unveil the shoe, whatever it may be. Was there any one or a couple that stick out in your mind? It's just like when you saw it, it just blew your mind.
Well, outside of the journey, the pump was a great shoe. And the Shacknosis was good. The Kemps. So many shoes were so. Yeah. When we got Nike Air back, so we lost them for 5-6 years in the middle.
Oh, okay.
Because mail order was brand new. They cut off all mail order. Looking back, I can say that at the time it was kind of drastic. That was 40% of our business. So, yeah, when we got Nike Air back and we had some of the new shoes, the one with the air on the side and everything, it was like, oh, I just love, I was just drooling to get them back in the catalog. And likely when we got Nike Air back, we were the only mail order company to get them.
Really? So, for how long?
So we had lost them for 6 years. Mail order. They just had to, mail order was so new, they didn't know what it was.
Yeah, I didn't understand it.
And they had to get a handle on it. Mm-hmm. Luckily, everyone else pretty well stood by us. A couple companies, a little bit different. But yeah, when we got back and we talked to them for a year. And so we talk about the pump and the Shaq shoes. Shaq was the one who was, we kept putting his shoe up front a lot. And I think Nike one day came to us and says, Mark Duggan, yeah, Gary DeStefano, like, how come you guys keep putting these Reeboks up there? You got to remember Reebok in the late 80s became number one again. They overtook the Nike. Shoes.
Yes.
So he says, why are you putting the Reebok shoes up front? He says, hey, if we had some Nike Airs, we'd love to put them on the front page.
Well, we don't we have started that way.
And Nike appreciated what we did for teams.
Yeah.
You know, so we were still a big dealer for them and track shoes and stuff like that. So, so we came together.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't know that. I didn't know that you guys had lost them because of the lack of understanding what mail order was. So that is interesting. And, I mean, but I guess at that time, though, with Reebok being, really, say, overtaking, did it impact the business? I mean, it said 40% of your business at the time, but with Reebok coming up and basically replacing with the, the cultural love in that brand so much, did it take a big hit or were you guys able to kind of balance out until that?
So we had three iterations of Eastbay. We had to keep changing. We started as the Eastbay running store, which is more running and track. When the Jordans came out in 85, and it was also, we talk about timing. It was our first color catalog.
Okay.
So you got the Jordans and team colors. You got the Dunks out there. You got the Air Force Ones and team colors. I mean, it was like Wizard of Oz. Like, wow, you went from black and white to this.
Technicolor.
And then when we lost Nike and we lost 40% of our business, we went to everybody. We had a lot of athletes there and nobody quit. So it was pretty amazing. You lose 40% of your business. And we said, what can we do to replace this? It's not going to be one product. It's going to be many things. And so we started carrying more and more of the baseball gloves and bats and a lot more starter jackets and jerseys and things like that.
Yeah.
We replaced the Nike so we lost 40%. To replace that, you have to have a 60% increase. And we did it the first year we lost them.
Oh,
but
wow.
That's the third iteration of Eastbay, where you really started carrying everything. Mm-hmm. Where we started calling Eastbay the sports source.
Okay. Man. Hey, that's, again, you guys pivot very well. That is really awesome. And I guess when Nike came back in, it just was kind of up from there because you guys were able to achieve without them and then just kind of adds to the top whenever they come back, right?
Well, the only thing that helps back is you have to have enough money to grow too. So, yeah.
That'll do it.
I have to give it. Like Harry Kolker a little shout out and John Schaefer and that because they worked really hard on getting Nike back and Dick Johnson. So they were very good at it.
Well, I got to ask you guys this. Actually, with so many, we can narrow down to sneaker retailers. I feel like every time I look up, there's a new sneaker store popping up.
It's amazing.
It is. But a lot of times they don't last that long. Like you guys are definitely a testament of a long-lasting company. What would you give them for advice to say, to be able to sustain and differentiate themselves from just, another door down the street?
Well, I think you have to know why you're in business.
Mm-hmm.
And why do you have value? Why would somebody want to come in your store? And I think you have to be willing to put your heart and soul into proving it, number one. But if your customers are telling you something different, you have to listen and learn and change gears if that's the case. So I think you have to kind of know who you are. Because if you don't, the customers aren't going to know who you are. And you got to show up every day. You can't be afraid to listen. You can't be afraid to think that you know everything. Talk to people, ask questions. Get the right staff.
Like Rick said, the first time we were out there, we realized the kids ain't leaving without the shoes. Once you put them on, you know, you got that feeling. You're going to run faster, jump higher.
There you go.
We're going with them. So you got to be able to change.
Now, after everything was said and done with the company, I got to know, do you guys have any of your favorites from that time kind of stashed away? Like any of your favorite shoes that kind of archive pieces in offices or maybe in back rooms?
Sadly, the only thing I have, I took two boxes, two dozen Tiger Epris with me, which is a gel Epris, is a running shoe.
Yeah.
And my kids said, they just remember me all the time with that. And last year, a couple of years ago, they bought me one. They found one online and bought me a new one. So I wear those a lot. So that's about the only thing I have. Well, we have the memories from what a great team we had, all the people. Yeah. We had memories like we got to meet, have dinner with Shaq and Bobby Orr, and got to meet so many, you know, Ken Griffin, so many athletes that we never thought possible. So, I mean, you can't take that. I mean, it's not things. It's the memories you make that are important.
100%. And you guys have memories for a lifetime, man. That is what you guys did again was amazing. And it's going to be talked about when it comes to sneaker culture forever. It's just as we talk about Nike Talk, we talk about all these different blogs and things out there. East Bay is up there with those in those conversations.
Well, we didn't mean to be. It just happened.
Happy accident, right?
I mean, just even writing the book, you know, our kids kept bothering us to write a book. And we were just going to write a memoir. And then when East Bay shut down after we're working a little bit because we didn't work too hard.
that's the second day.
Suddenly you read online. I mean, East Bay's one of the top topics out there. And it's like you got LeBron James and Steph Curry and all these things. And well, I love the catalog and, you know, can't believe it shut down. And just so many other customers, probably like yourself, was probably one of them that got on the blog. And it makes you realize that how fortunate we were. And
that's awesome.
Thankful for it.
Yeah. And that, again, you guys did awesome. You guys have an awesome story. I mean, I feel like you have stories for days that span through the time at East Bay. Heck, you guys have probably more stories even as kids. So I'm sure that's amazing. Like you said, the memories are worth more than anything else. And being able to do that with, you know, two friends, two lifelong friends, I don't think many people can say that ever. So you guys are definitely kind of the exception to the rule. And I think in the best way possible.
Well, thank you.
Our wives, Barb and Sue, are best friends. Our kids are all very good friends. In fact, our son started a business together at one time. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's
been blessed.
Amazing. That's amazing. And for anybody listening right now, the book of East Bay, that's what it is. That's what we're talking about today. You can see it in their background as well. For everything you want to know how it started, about Art and Rick and their mindset with the business. I mean, it's a good read, especially if you're a fan of the magazine or the catalog. But also, if you're just a fan of, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you want to know more about business and how they did it, I think it's going to be a great read as well. But before we finish up, Art, Rick, any final words for the listeners? Any final knowledge you'd like to impart on them?
How do you spell that? Knowledge. I'd say listen to Mike more often. What do you think? If we impart anything to anyone, I would say listen to Mike more often. Make Mike
first,
more podcasts more frequently.
I appreciate that, guys.
I would just add that all the proceeds go to childhood cancer research, a place called Little Warrior Foundation. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that. So that's even more amazing. So you guys go buy the book. Just buy this great story for a great cause. So you can't go wrong there.
We have a website, bookofeastbay.com. And as we started off going directly to kids, we put our prologue on our website. So if somebody wants to get a taste of what the book's like, they can read the prologue on our website and then decide if they want to go out and buy the book.
That's perfect. We'll link it all down there. So we'll put a link to the Book of East Bay's website. So that way, are they able to purchase the book on that website as well?
No, sorry, not yet. Yeah.
Not yet. Okay. So we'll make sure we put it, of course.
We didn't have our team behind. We don't know how to sell anything on the internet. We needed a team for that, for God's sakes.
Look,
Mike,
just call Art and Rick. They'll pick up the phone. They'll run down to their garage to see if they have a couple copies, and they'll sell their mail it to you. So. But no, you guys have been awesome.
And the good thing is we can't send out two left feet of a book.
Yeah. So. You might get two books though. Hey, there you go. So they won't send
half a book.
You might get two books. But thank you guys, Art, Rick. I appreciate the time. You both have been absolutely amazing. I know that everyone's going to love hearing this. I'm gonna listen to it back myself. And we're gonna make sure that we connect everything we can to help get the book sold. I mean, I know you don't need me to do that, but we'll help as much as we can on our side. But I appreciate you guys. And go check out the Book of East Bay. And guys, if you're listening for the first time or haven't done so yet, hit the subscribe button, like, comment, you know, all the electronic things. Click the button for us. They help us out a lot. And leave us comments. Let us know you watched the episode. Let us know some of your favorite East Bay catalog moments, some of the favorite shoes you saw out there. Leave it in the comments so we can get it back to Art and Rick so we can add more to their memories.
We would love to see those if you'd share them.
Heck yeah, definitely. You heard them. So now you're on the hook to do it, guys. So I appreciate everybody for listening. Appreciate Art and Rick for being here. And until next time, guys, see ya.
Take care, Mike. Thanks for what you do. You're good at it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, guys. Thank you.
Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. If you want more insights into the sneaker world, I've started a newsletter called the Sneaker Newsletter to share my knowledge of over 2 decades experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link below or go to thesneakernewsletter.com. Last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.